All right. We can be done talking to each other now. A couple things before we get started tonight. This screen, as you can notice, after 2 years, it's begun to rip. And so whoever puts it away, don't pull the screen off of there. We're just going to have to set it up somewhere in the storage room. The other thing is, they finished doing the windows back in the storage, so they want us to move all our stuff back into our old room. So there's at least 50 people here, but if you picked up one thing in the room and moved it to the next room, you'd probably move at least most of what's in there now into that room, and then we just have to put all this stuff in. So if you could, before you leave, think, oh, I haven't moved anything, let me go quick run in that room and move one thing from the room to the next, that would be highly appreciated. What's that? Yes, try packing in it as tight as you can. That would be appreciated. What was the other thing? Oh, yes. I guess in 2 weeks, Easter is happening, correct? Or is it 3 weeks? 2 weeks. 2 weeks? It's the 8th of April. So I'm really excited about that. So if you're working on your project or talking to your friends, you got 2 weeks to get all that together and get it all here and do all the fun things that we're going to do. So I'm looking forward to Easter. I've already seen some of the art that's coming. It's very cool. So anyway, we are done with Matthew. Last week we were done with Matthew. And a year and a half in the gospel. And so now we're going into Proverbs. And Proverbs has 31 chapters. So we'll be there a while doing Proverbs. How to start? Our culture is very self-help oriented. I didn't want to spend any money on magazines, so I stole a few. Self-helping myself from somebody, but I promise not to reveal who that person was. And unfortunately, they're all women's magazines. I didn't mean that on purpose. This has nothing to do with women's issues tonight. I promise not to discuss women's issues tonight. But when you go by the checkout line, you have to read these things, right? Or at least the sort of the what they say register in your brain. Well, before we get to a few of the things that are on those, our culture for sure knows that there's something wrong. We spend $80 billion on mental health every year. And look at yourself in the mirror. This is what you get for $80 billion. We should be better off for the $80 billion that we pay for mental health. But the things that lie underneath mental health are, one, something's wrong. And so we got to figure out what's wrong and how we can fix it and what constitutes what's wrong and then how we constitute what's right. And so we have all of these different schools of how to do this. And then this is where we get all of these nice our magazines. So we have Freud, who gave us psychoanalysis and really about, you know, with the Freudian slip, you know, something comes out that you really were thinking, but you live behind a facade. And he had a lot to do with, you know, it was all sex for him, and sexual repression. And you have Maslow and his hierarchy of needs. So he kind of analyzed people as to how, like, base their needs were, and then how, you know, human they were, and then how animal they were, and kind of analyzed people that way. And you have Skinner, who basically said, you know, we are all products of our environment. And he's, you know, he's not the father, but he's one of the fathers of behavioralism. But all of these schools of thought, and, you know, Rogers is another one who did, you know, helped self-actualization. That's what Rogers kind of invented, that word, to be self-actualized. But that all comes out in these magazines. And so I thought, like, because our culture is so desperate for answers, that I would read to you some of the answers. And I'm sorry that these are just answers for women, but you can get them for men and men's health and everything else. It's not like they're not out there for guys. But here we are. I'm just going to read them to you, and you know, they're kind of interesting. Okay, get slim, gain energy, one easy workout does it all. The best sex ever, make it happen. Quick toning tricks, 3 weeks to flab-free arms. Party pretty, pro beauty secrets to try at home, a healthier you. 14 totally doable tips. Boost your happiness, 20 stress-free ways to create more joy. The one-minute body toners, easy at-home moves for every troubled zone. Get slim, yes, even if you sit all day. I like that one. Many of us would like that one. Well, you know, sexual chemistry, get it, keep it. Stressed, make your home a happier place. Maybe a good one, breast cancer news and alert for young women. The beauty diet, have clear, glowing skin, 77 ways to be more gorgeous. Then we have, if you look inside, in the happiness Q&A, just some of the questions that people are asking. I have a problem reaching my goals. I'll get excited about a career opportunity, then lose interest. Why? I had to put my dog to sleep last month, and I still cry every day. Am I overreacting? My boyfriend and I live far apart, and I'm having a hard time feeling close. How can we bridge the divide? We're all looking for answers, and most of us want those answers to be quick answers. We want to be able to sit in our seat and get toned. I do, and if you could prove to me that that would work, I would do it. You know, that's I am like the one who gets drawn in by the infomercials. Early on in our marriage, I worked nights at a hospital, and everybody sleeps, and so I had to watch infomercials to stay awake, and my wife had to take the credit card away from me because I started buying strange barbecue grills that cooked cakes and did all kinds of stuff. Did the best pineapple turnover ever. Well, we're all products of that culture. And I think it's extremely tempting to read Proverbs, a self-help book. To look at Proverbs and think, if I can just figure this all out, then I can be better. These are where all the answers are. I want to kind of lay for you a different foundation, a different way of reading Proverbs. Now, I don't want to deny that Proverbs is extremely practical. It's got really, really practical things in it for us to learn. But it's not an answer book. It doesn't have all the answers, and it definitely doesn't have ways to get toned sitting down. I want to just be a little theological, this tiny bit, just give you a little bit of theology before we read the book so that you can kind of understand where we're going to go. And so I want to offer you we want to start at Romans chapter 12, verse 2. Because all of us have a certain mindset that continually comes, kind of we have this mindset that's influenced by the culture. And so part of the process of reading Proverbs is to realize that it's a different culture. And so we have to have this mindset that Romans 12:2 offers us. It says, "Do not conform any longer to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will." A lot of times when we think about renewing our minds, a lot of times what we do is, it's really, okay, the pattern of the world, I'm not supposed to do this. I'm thinking about the way the world has me think, or I'm kind of buying into the world's value systems, or I'm just doing what the world does. Now I need to beat myself up, and I need to kind of somehow yank my brain into the right direction and get it all right. But that's not what it means. What it means is that you were, when you came into the kingdom of God, you're born into a whole new paradigm. And part of the point of renewing your mind is simply reminding yourself of what the paradigm is that you're actually living in. And so I want to offer that paradigm before we get to Proverbs. And that there's a cultural mandate. God gave you and I a cultural mandate in the very beginning of time. And I'd like to read that cultural mandate for you because I think it's the container for Proverbs and how we'll read it. So let me read it to you. It's in Genesis chapter 1, starting in verse 26. Then God said, Let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth, and over all creatures that move along the ground. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living creature that moves on the ground." Then God said, "I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the earth and all the birds of the air and all the creatures that move on the ground, everything that has breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food." And it was so. God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. By the very nature of being human, you're to create culture. Culture simply is the way we interact, how we think the best way to do things are in a particular setting, the way we're going to rule over the animals, the way we're going to cultivate. All of that is culture. And before the fall, God says, go fill the earth and create culture and create ways of doing it. Now, we know in Genesis chapter 3 that we sinned and we fell. So if anyone ever says, all we need to do in America is get back to the good old days, the only good old days are the first two chapters of Genesis. There aren't any good old days after that. And so we're fallen people, but we're still, because we're image bearers of God, makers of culture. We make culture. Now, what Proverbs is all about is what and how godly culture looks like, how we operate in the world. Now, if you remember, we spent the last year and a half going through Matthew. One of the key things of every gospel that comes out is that Christ died on the cross for our sins. So, up to Jesus, making culture has been really difficult and very hard. And after Jesus, it's going to be hard too. But Jesus died on the cross for our sins, and he rose from the dead, and he conquered death, removing anxiety, as we've talked about. And so the thing he's given us when he went to heaven and sent the Spirit of God to us is the opportunity to actually begin to fulfill the cultural mandate that was in Genesis all over again. You and I, in this church and in this community and other church communities, can actually create godly culture. We can actually do it the way it's supposed to be done. Now, we can't do it perfectly, but we can do it. And with the help of the Spirit of God, we can begin to create a culture where people look in and say, why is this so different? What's going on here? Because we can begin to point ourselves back to the garden. That is the objective of Christians, is that we are in the renewing process of our own lives and of the earth around us. We're creating culture, godly culture. And so what Proverbs is simply a way for us to be able to do that. Now, all the way through the Old Testament and the New Testament, we have two characters that come up, pop up all the time. We have priests and we have prophets. Priests are like Paul. Priests tell us how to worship God. Priests tell us the ways to worship God. Priests tell us how God feels about us and how he loves us. And so we see Paul and other people like John, who are definitely priests, telling us how to worship God. And there are some priests in the Old Testament, but they're filled more with prophets. And prophets tell us, you've sinned, you've fallen away from God, here are consequences, you need to wake up. And so we see these two characters go through the Old Testament and the New Testament, and we're used to them. We're used to lots of sermons about how we should worship God and how God feels about us. And we're used to God's sermons about and studying the Bible about, oh, you need to stop and you need to repent and God feels this way and he's going to crush you and or he's going to crush this enemy of yours. But what we're not very used to in Christian culture is the sage. And the sage is the one writing in Proverbs, the one who writes the Song of Solomon, the one who writes Job, the sage is not so concerned about our relationship with God. Now, he thinks it's vital and important, but what he's concerned about is how we operate as people in culture. What is the godly way to operate in culture? How do we interact with each other? What are the wise ways to interact? So, I thought what we would do is just enter into the first 7 verses of Proverbs. And I'd like to just say that we're going to attempt to do Proverbs a little bit differently than we have done other sermon series. After Easter is over, we're probably going to, Rod and I are going to spend more time preaching together. We're also probably going to ask some of you guys who have wisdom in certain areas to join us in that conversation. And we will probably break up in groups more and talk about things and wrestle with things, because the way we live and the way we create culture is something that all of us have something to say. And as we talked about last week about discipleship, I want to clarify just a couple things before we get into this. Because discipleship is a very sticky issue in the church. Because what comes to most of our minds when we talk about discipleship is there's somebody over me, they tell me exactly what to do, and I do that, and if I don't, they smack me, or they kick me out, or I fall out of grace, or I just don't get it right, and then I'm just sort of on the outside. But really what discipleship is that there are people in this community, people in other communities, that have and know things better than you do. And you have things and know things better than they do. And so as we look around, if there is somebody, say, I have a year and a half year old son and he's driving me nuts, and I look at somebody in our church who seems to have dealt with their year and a half son pretty well, I go and say, you know what, you must know something, maybe, about dealing with your year and a half year old son. Can you teach me? I want to learn. And then it doesn't mean that you do everything that that person does. You take their wisdom, you evaluate it, and you apply it in your life. And you say, well, that's not going to work in my situation, but huh, I never really thought about that. So part of it is just acknowledging that other people have things in the community of God that they can offer us. It's also true vice versa. If you have things, then you look around, gosh, you think, wow, I can see that this person's struggling and I've wrestled with that. You might gently come and sit down next to them and say, you know, hey, I have this. Maybe we could talk about this. I've kind of gone through this experience. That's what I want Proverbs to be. Because Proverbs covers tons and tons of topics. What it means to husband, what it means to be a father, what it means to be a son, what it means to be a wife. It talks about sex. It talks about money. It talks about, you know what, I'm not an expert on like 10% of those. So we're going to talk together and we'll include you guys in those conversations. So hopefully, and no promises, we're going to have a more involved, interactive thing. We'll see how that all works out. You know, it's the village, so promises are promises. So let's just get into Proverbs. The proverb of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. Well, we went through 1 and 2 Samuel. Most of us who were here for that know who King David is. He's the first rightful king of Israel. And Solomon is his son. Now, Solomon is the greatest king of Israel has ever had, the most rich, the most powerful, and supposedly the wisest. He asked for wisdom instead of power and money and stature. And so he got all of that, plus he got wisdom. Well, Solomon was friends with the Egyptians at his rule. And so Proverbs actually follow the same kinds of Proverbs that the Egyptians have, in the sense of the same style and the way they teach. Except that Proverbs for Egyptians, the school of Proverbs, sayings and instructions, were meant for the elite, and for the elite only, and were always pointed towards Pharaoh and Pharaoh's court. But Jewish Proverbs are for everybody. They're for all of us. And so Solomon, who wrote most of the Proverbs, he probably collected some of these from, you know, his mother and from oral tradition, and then other ones were his. And And then other people kind of said, oh, I remember Solomon said this, and they wrote that down. And so he wrote about 80% of this, and then there's some other people who wrote these. But what we need to understand is, as we go into this, is that it's like being in school. The next six verses are the syllabus for the next year and a half of our Proverbs class. So I don't know how many of you remember, some of us college students, you know all about it, but the syllabuses, I always hated them, because either they were like, there's going to be two tests, one paper, and that's it, and then there's like 3 pages of all the reading you have to do. And you're like, great, I'm going to flunk those 2 tests. Or you think, or it's like, there's going to be 17 papers that you have to write, and you've got to be present, and they're going to take attendance, and here's the matrix of attendance, and the professor's rather anal in the way he looks at it all. Well, this syllabus is just a few words to tell us the intentions of the class. So, the second verse of Proverbs says, to know, this is what we're going to learn, to know wisdom and instruction, to discern the sayings of understanding. Okay, so we're going to know wisdom. When you say somebody's wise, that seems like, ooh, wow, somebody's a wise person. Well, wisdom in the Bible actually is not a very sexy word. Actually, it's kind of a low-level word. Like, being wise isn't really like, ooh, that's, you know, the wise man up on the mountain that we all go look to and listen to. If you look at Exodus 35:35, God is talking about the people who are going to build his tent of meeting in his worship place, and he says, he has filled them with skill to do all kinds of works as craftsmen. Well, wisdom is the same word. It's the same word for skill. Wisdom is to have knowledge to do something, to have knowledge on how to do it, and then be able to do it. So, if you're a coach in basketball, like I was, I had all the knowledge, but I wasn't very wise because I had none of the skill to apply it. So wisdom really is having the knowledge and having the ability to do something well. So knowing about it and being able to apply that knowledge. So the first thing is, we're going to have worldly wisdom. We're going to know about life, and then we're going to figure out how to live life. So if you're a wise person, then you know about life, and you know how to live out life successfully. That's what we're going to be doing. The second word is instruction. It's kind of a weird way to translate this word, because really what it is discipline and training. So part of this class, part of these proverbs, are that we're going to learn not only to know how and to apply our knowledge, but we're going to learn self-discipline. We're going to learn how to actually practice it. We're going to learn how to apply it. And then to discern and the sayings of understanding. Now, the syllabus is already a little confusing. But because discern and understanding are actually come from the same root word, and it, basically what it means is that you're going to be able to listen to a wise person talk and know, like, okay, I need to do this. I'm not going to listen to this. So really what we're going to learn is how to say, you know, Larry, why don't you teach me how to play the guitar? And I want to learn rock and roll. He might teach you rock and roll and blues, and you kind of understand I'm only going to listen to the rock and roll and forget the blues, because who likes blues anyway? So, come on, guys. It's being able to listen to the wise person and not feel like, oh, I have to take everything that they say to me. It's the ability to take what's important to you. They may have a lot of other good things to say that they just don't apply to you. So we're going to learn that. The third verse, the next thing we're going to learn is to receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, justice, and equity. Part of creating culture is about the way we conduct ourselves. So as we read Proverbs, one of the things that we're going to learn about, and the things that we're going to hopefully understand, is how to conduct ourselves godly, in a godly way. And he says that the three characteristics of conducting yourself in a godly way is righteousness, justice, and equity. So righteousness is the rightness, the way things ought to be. So we're going to, in culture, we're going to conduct things in this culture, this church culture here, in the right way. We're going to attempt to do them the way they're supposed to be done. We're going to do them with equity. We're not going to say, you know, just because Rod is bigger and stronger than all of us, that he has the right to say how everything goes. Right, we're gonna at least say that he has to beat up five of us at the same time before he gets that right. So it's gonna be equal in you know combat in the village, and justice. But nobody here is gonna be taken advantage of. In a godly culture, people aren't taken advantage of. So we're gonna learn to conduct our lives in a way that we don't take advantage of people. Things are equitable. And we're looking to see how it's supposed to be and trying to practice that. So that's what we're going to learn as we spend the next year and a half going through this. Verse 4. To give prudence to the naive, to the youth knowledge and discretion. Prudence. This is the same word where Jesus says in Matthew, I think it is, where you have to be as crafty or as shrewd as a snake or as a serpent and innocent as a dove. We're going to teach craftiness to the naive, to the ignorant. The assumption is that all of us at some level are ignorant. There are things that we need to know. But in particular, this is connected to youth. And so the next phrase is about youth. And naive and ignorance comes with being young. You know, my daughter doesn't, as you can see in our interactions, she's naive and ignorant about exactly how the Apostles' Creed works. You know, she's just pretty sure God's done it and we need to believe it. And she doesn't understand the complexity of that. But the other important thing about this idea of craftiness and shrewdness is that it's a forward thinking. That what we're going to learn is how to look forward. And how to discern and how to understand so that we're not just sort of living day to day, having the experiences come and then we sort of sort them out. We're going to learn how to be crafty. And we're going to, those of us who are ignorant, which is all of us at some level, are going to learn stuff. We're going to be educated. And for us who are young, we're going to learn discretion. I think some of us who are old can learn discretion. I just recently heard a pastor talk about the problem with our culture, and I agree with him, and that it is our culture is run by people who are 16 to 25. You know, who's on the front of the magazines? If you have a 30-year-old, like a magazine geared towards 30-year-olds, there's still 16-year-olds on the front of the magazine. That youth is what runs our culture. 16 to 25 is what people target as a market. So if you're in that, advertisers want you. And they want to shape you. Well, what happens when youth runs a culture? It's really immature. I look through the magazine racks, and I didn't see any magazines that said, you know, been married 50 years, would like to tell you how to have a good sex life. Didn't see anyone, you know, how to hold your marriage together for 70 years. That nobody talks, that we don't care about people who are actually 40 and over. So if you're 40 and over, we don't care about you as a culture. And I know that's kind of odd, you know, for those of you who are turning 40, that you've just become irrelevant. But talk to some of the 40-year-olds in this community and they'll tell you how irrelevant they feel. So the problem is that youth has run our culture for a very long time. It's not just the last 10 years that it's been running our culture. So the problem with people who are older, still kind of immature because youth has been running the culture. Now, there is something about age. No matter how old, you are wise if you're old. Period. Now, you may have made all the wrong choices, but you're still wise because you know what all the wrong choices are. Right? So even if you screwed up a ton, you could still sit up here and tell everybody in this community what not to do. Right? That's key. Because this is the point of Proverbs. that there is a long line of people who screwed up. And so they started telling people about how they screwed up, and we ended up with the Proverbs. Because they're like, don't do this or this will happen. So, age is, don't think that you're not wise if you're old. You have a lot to say. Maybe it's just what not to do, but you still have a lot to say. But the other thing in our culture is that I do notice with older people is that younger people aren't considered wise. And that's not true either. You don't have to be old to be wise. You do have to be old to be experienced. I could be wise, but I probably can't do as good a job as Rod could in telling you how to raise a 15-year-old. I've never raised a 15-year-old. And this happened, like, Susan and I, when we first got married, we had these great ideas. First off, neither of us was going to work full-time. We both were going to work part-time. Susan was not going to stay home. She was going to work part-time and take care of the kid part-time. I was going to work part-time, take care of the kid. And we had a kind of this range, you know, the kid would get up at 7, and we'd make sure he's in bed by, have a nap by 10, and he would sleep till 3. And then after 3, you know, we'd bathe him, spank him, and get him back into bed by 8 o'clock. We had it all figured out. And we didn't even pull off the working part-time, each of us, in the first year. But we thought we had it. And I remember being so mad at my first, or the guy who performed our wedding, and then he was discipling me, and he, you know, he was offering his sage advice, and he was like, those people who are married and have no children don't know what it's like for the person who has one child. They just can't even understand it, and they never will unless they have a child. And the person who has one child doesn't understand two. And I thought, this guy is just full of crap. Of course I can figure out what it's like to have a child. This is not hard. I just look around and hang out around a child, and it makes sense. Well, it's not. Let me tell you, I have two now, and I have no idea what it's like to have three. And I'm sure I don't know what it's like to have four. And when, you know, if you have 9 or 10, then I'm really out of my league as to what that's like. So I don't know. Now, I could give some, you know, I could make, if I'm really, really wise, I might be able to make some suggestions. But I still can't, I have no idea, I can't comprehend. We have to understand that as we look at these Proverbs. That people who have experience can offer us knowledge and information and help us learn to practice things. Now, I remember being in class, and you get that teacher who decides that he needs to go through the syllabus and explain it the first class, and you're just like, oh God, I can't handle this. So if you're there, I'm sorry. This is only a short syllabus, so we'll make it through. Verse 5. A wise man will hear and increase in learning. A man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. And this is, if you're older, for like, you know, a few of you here, you're actually going to get something. Just because you're old and wise doesn't mean you can't learn anything out of Proverbs. So there is lots of things that young people can teach you, and there's lots of things that these Proverbs can teach you, reinforce, remind you, help you remember, and it's the wise person who remembers, who understands that. Now, here's a little thing on wisdom. As you go around, looking around to see who you're going to learn things from in this community, you might keep in mind what James has to say in James chapter 3, verse 13. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show it by his good life. So the first thing, you're looking for people who have a good life. Not a life where they're out partying and having fun all the time, but a person who seems to have a well-adjusted, joyful life. That's somebody you'd be looking for. Now, you might define joy differently than someone else, so it might be an utterly different person than someone else might pick. But look for a person with good life, and a good life. Here's the next key, and the important one. By deeds done in humility that comes from wisdom. The most honestly humble person is going to be the one who's very wise. So look around your community, look around your other Christian communities, and look for people who are humble. So if there's a mother who seems to do well with her children and she's really humble and you think you need some help, go ask her. If there's, you know, someone who seems to be humble and they really are able to, you know, deal with being toned while sitting down, or however that works, then ask them how they get in shape. Whatever it is, spiritually on and on. You can kind of figure that out yourself. The key is humility. Verse 6. Now here's kind of the key to the class. To understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their riddles. Well, I like this because, you know, smart people, they always use big words and they always are confusing. And so I think part of what proverbs are is they're going to help some of us understand those smart people and those wise people, and it will also help get you smart people to talk plainly. That's going to be the point. That we're all going to be able to understand what wise people say. We're going to be given some ways to do that as we read through Proverbs. So that's the syllabus. So I'm really excited because I know that the Proverbs have some really cool things that I can rant and rave about, and some of you can rant and rave about and offer your wisdom, and people can, and it should be a really good time together. If we're all willing to take it in humility, I think we could have a really good time. And the exciting part about this is it's not just for self-help. This is not so that we all get it right and figure out our lives, but it is that we are creating a culture that is counter to the culture out there. I really do believe that as we wrestle with some of these, that some of them are going to kind of irk us inside because we still have parts of the culture stuck in us. And so part of what Proverbs is going to do is yank out our cultural value system and help us have a godly, begin to develop and create a godly culture. And that's the thing. I really want everybody to understand this, is that it's not just about doing the right thing, it's about, as a community, creating something. So as we deal justly, and as we work with equity, and as we conduct ourselves in godly ways, and we listen to the wise people amongst us, we are creating culture together that's godly and counter and should be a witness to the outside world as we call people to be part of it and see it and experience it. So we're going to look at our very first proverb, and then we're going to close. And it is in verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. That is our first proverb. That the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Is that what it said? Yes. And the beginning of knowledge. The sage knows something that's very important. That you can't build a Christian culture, you can't build a godly culture without building it on something. And so the key for us, the edifice that we want to build as a community of God, has to be built on the fear of God. And the fear of God is a really confusing thing. Because for most of us, in our culture, fear is kind of built up around anxiety and phobia. So when we think of fear of God, we think of kind of anxiety about God and about, like, fright for our life. But fear of God, I will attempt to explain it to you, and maybe we can get our hands around it just a tiny bit. Moses, the leader of the Israelites who helped them come out of Egypt and into the desert and then into the Promised Land, his first encounter with God happened like this, in a burning bush. He sees a burning bush, and then God says, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The key to fear of God is the fact that we sang this song, The Deep, and what did we say? That God is wholly other. God is not you. And we learned this in Matthew, right? When Jesus faces demons, what does he say? Really, in the language, he says, "You're out of order, get behind me. I'm ruler, and you are out of order. You're controlling things that aren't yours to control." And God's kingdom is all about order. And so fearing God is simply recognizing that you're not God. It's recognizing your place. And at the end of Ecclesiastes, close to the end, Solomon says this, "Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Part of being human, part of being God's image bearer, is understanding that you're His image bearer. You're not His image. You're not God. So, fear is to acknowledge that somehow, something, God is different. And that difference does create some form of terror. Not the kind of terror where God will rip you apart, but if He wanted to, I suppose, but more about order and where you stand. And so as we look at Proverbs, the beginning of knowledge is to understand your place. That you're not God, and you don't get to dictate things. That God dictates it, and we submit to that, and we obey. And so that's where the next part of that phrase says, fools despise wisdom and instruction. The actual literal translation is, evil people despise wisdom and instruction. If you think you're God, then you don't care what God has to say. So part of learning, part of being a learner as we read Proverbs, is understanding your place with God. Understanding that He is other, He is King, and you are in submission to that. So I'm really excited about Proverbs. I'm excited about hearing the wisdom of this community. I'm excited about us kind of wrestling with some of these Proverbs and what they have to say about marriage and women and men and money and doing what's right and listening to evil and sexual sin. And I'm excited. I'm excited about you guys bringing your experience to bear on that. So I'm actually just going to close in prayer. We're not going to discuss today. Let's pray. Dear God, thank You so much for the opportunity to be in a place where, Jesus, You have given us a chance now to bring Your kingdom to bear in this world, to actually show to the world the way it was supposed to be, to show what Your forgiveness looks like in the community and what the right things are to do and how to interact with one another. Lord, I pray that You would protect us from the evil one and the lies that come in as we wrestle with what's right. Lord, I also pray that You would raise up the old sages in this community, and they would be humble and not try to shove their wisdom down our throat, but simply offer it in humility, and that we would listen. Lord, I pray for the young people here, myself, that You would protect us and that You would give us great wisdom so that we don't have to make a lot of mistakes down the road, and that we can live a good life. It doesn't mean that everything's going to go well, I know, but that we can model Your culture. So I thank You for that, God. I'm excited. Amen. A couple ways to respond. I'm going to go grab, can you go grab some baskets? I don't have any baskets for somebody. Giving, when that comes around, if you're visiting with us, we're happy to have you. But if you're a part of this community, we would like you to give. So we pass that around. It supports the ministry, makes all this happen, pays for my salary, pays Rod's salary, pays hopefully for the future building, all those kinds of things that we are wrestling with as a community. We're going to listen to some music. We're going to listen to some meditation time where you can just be quiet. And then we'll have pizza together and salad. So let's spend some time continuing to worship God.
Be